Who is Esau Edom? Written by Charles Weissman. Read for you by Paul Maitrejane. This is a free tearingdownidols.com audiobook. Reproduction and redistribution are encouraged. For more free reading and listening material, please visit tearingdownidols.com. Chapter 5. World Conflict and Adversity. A common theme found in most plays, novels, stories, movies, etc., is that of a conflict, usually existing between two of the main characters in a script. In the play Julius Caesar, there was a conflict between Caesar and his conspirators, Brutus and Cassius. In the story of Cinderella, we find a conflict between the title character and her wicked stepmother. Without this conflict and opposition, the entire plot becomes pointless, as it gives life and meaning to the events and actions of the characters. Some manner of conflict or struggle is actually expected, just as they exist in nature, in our lives, in history, and in stories, usually in the form of the age-old conflict between good and evil. Today, even the casual observer to the events that are transpiring in the world can perceive the existence of a conflict or struggle between ideologies, philosophies, laws, religion, governments, etc., which produce the trouble, misfortunes, and adversity in the world. However, it is not apparent to most who the actors or individuals are at the forefront of this conflict in the world, or why the conflicts and adversity exist. God has written a script for the world, which identifies the two main characters who would be involved in an age-long struggle or conflict, that being Esau and Jacob. This is a constant theme throughout the script. So let's look at the script and see what it has to say about them. Esau versus Jacob. Toward the beginning of God's script, the Bible, we read of the character Esau making his first appearance on stage as he is being born to Rebekah and Isaac along with his twin brother Jacob. The scene opens with Isaac's request to God on behalf of his wife. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife, because she was barren, and the Lord answered him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the children struggled together within her, and she said, "If it be so, why am I thus?" And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, "Two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger." Genesis 25, verses 21 through 23. Here we find that this conflicting and antagonistic relationship between these two characters, Jacob and Esau, was ordained by God even before their birth. Rebekah was barren, and it was God who had allowed her to conceive, forming Esau and Jacob in the womb along with their unique and differing characteristics. God purposely made these two characters different and contrary to one another. The contrasting differences between Esau and Jacob were represented by their struggle or conflict in their mother's womb. This was to set the stage for generations of conflict and antagonism between Esau and Jacob, who were regarded by God as two different nations or racial groups. Some translations say, two rival races. They thus were to be separate peoples, each with their own separate character roles and destinies. Two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. Their struggle also represents the struggle between the kingdom of God and the kingdom of the world. Here then we find the primary origin and source of world conflicts, international strife, conspiracies, revolutions, and political upheavals. This conflict and struggle was a characteristic that was to exist between the descendants of Esau and Jacob, that is to say, a permanent and continuing conflict between two nations or races of people. This then brings the matter within the scope of international law, and our conflicts today lie within this international sphere. So strong is this theme that it becomes a principle itself. Throughout the Bible, the nations of Edom and Israel were in conflict with one another. The struggle between Esau and Jacob in the womb was thus a sign of what was to come in the world on an international level. It was to set the stage for a continued conflict between the ideologies, laws, philosophies, governments, religion, and status of the descendants of these two characters. The Jew versus the Christian. The evidences of the God-ordained conflict and struggle between Esau and Jacob can be followed down through history to the present times. World conflicts, wars, persecutions, and social struggles are a result of two different systems generated by the two different peoples or nations descended from Esau and Jacob. While there are differences among any two races or nations, among no other two has such an antagonistic and conflicting relationship existed as between the Jews and the white Christian people. Throughout history, these two peoples have been at odds with one another. Their manner of law, government, religion, and ideologies are diametrically opposite to one another. It is an ancient conflict between the ancient adversaries of Esau, Jews, and Jacob, white Christians. The connection between the white race and Christianity, and the Jews within Judaism, is universally recognized. Judaism, or the religion of the Jews as expressed in their Talmud, is contrary to the precepts of the Christian Bible. What the Bible approves of, the Talmud disapproves of, and what the Bible prohibits, the Talmud allows in some form. The following table bears witness to this. Judaism from the Talmud approves of sodomy. If one committed sodomy with a child of less than 9 years, no guilt is incurred. Sanhedrin 54b. Approves of child sacrifices to idols. He who gives of his seed to Molech incurs no punishment. Sanhedrin 64a. Cursing parents allowed. One who curses his parents isn't punished unless he curses them by divine name. Sanhedrin 66a. Allows enchanting. It is permitted to consult by a charm the spirits of oil and eggs, and make incantations. Sanhedrin 101a. Bestiality condoned. Women having intercourse with a beast can marry a priest. The act is but a mere wound. Yabamoth 59b. Harlotry lawful. A harlot's hire is permitted, for what the woman has received is legally a gift. Abodah Zarah 62b through 63a. Blasphemy allowed. One can revile the divine name if mentally applying it to some other object. Sanhedrin 65a through b. Not required to keep vows. Every vow which I may make in the future shall be null. Nedarim 23a through 23b. Murder condoned. If 10 men smote a man with 10 staves and he died, they are exempt from punishment. Sanhedrin 78a. Christianity from the Bible prohibits sodomy. Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is abomination. Leviticus 18 verse 22. Prohibits child sacrifice to idols. Whoever gives any of his seed to Molech, he shall surely be put to death. Leviticus 20, verse 2. Cursing parents prohibited. He that curses his father or mother shall be put to death. Exodus 21, verse 17. Matthew 15, verse 4. Disallows enchanting. None of you shall be an enchanter or a charmer or consulter with familiar spirits. Deuteronomy 18, verses 10 through 11. Bestiality condemned. You shall not lie with any beast, nor shall any woman stand before a beast to lie with it. Leviticus 18, verse 23. Harlotry unlawful. She that plays the whore in her father's house shall be put to death. Deuteronomy 22, verse 21. Blasphemy punishable. He that blasphemes the name of the Lord shall surely be put to death. Leviticus 24, verse 16. Required to keep vows. If a man vows, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that he spoke. Numbers 30, verse 2. Murder forbidden. He that smites a man with a stave so he dies, he is a murderer and shall be put to death. Numbers 35, verse 18. Hundreds of such contrasting illustrations could easily be presented to further prove that Judaism and the Jewish Talmud are opposite and antagonistic to the Bible and Christianity, just as Esau and Jacob were. This exposes the false notion that Christianity was derived from Judaism and nullifies the term Judeo-Christian. The Talmud teaches the opposite laws and principles from that of the Bible. Even where a sound and well-recognized moral law of God is concerned, the Talmud in every instance tries to find some exception to it. The exception, deviation, or modification is then justified by the words and teaching of some ancient rabbi, or the sages, as they are called in the Talmud. The Talmud is not a book of godly morals or virtuous ethics, but is replete with perversion and teachings of sexual debauchery. Footnote. In 1923, Dr. Alfred Luzensky, who had translated the Talmud into Hungarian in 1910, was charged by order of the Public Ministry of Hungary with pornography and with corruption of public morals. The court found that, quote, "The horrors contained in the translation of Alfred Luzensky are without exception found in the Talmud. His translation is accurate." End quote. End footnote. Contrary to popular belief, the Jews are not followers of Old Testament law, since they are not the people of the Old Testament, the Israelites. In fact, in the book Sanhedrin, section 88b, the Talmud teaches that its precepts and laws are of a greater stringency than in respect to those of the Bible. It also says that when a Jew claims there is no breach of Talmudic law, he may act even though a biblical law may be transgressed. It is the Talmud that guides the life and spirit of the Jew. The Talmud is to this day the circulating heart's blood of the Jewish religion. Whatever laws, customs, or ceremonies we, Jews, observe, whether we are Orthodox, conservative, Reformed, or merely spasmodic sentimentalists, we follow the Talmud. It is our common law. Footnote. Herman Wolk, in New York Herald Tribune, November 17, 1959. Rabbi Boxer stated, "Judaism is not the religion of the Bible." Ben Zion Boxer, Judaism and the Christian Predicament, 1966, page 159. End footnote. The nature of the Jew is inclined not towards biblical precepts, but towards Jewish lore and tradition within the Talmud, which is the mainstay of Jewish existence. Footnote. Solomon Grazel, A History of the Jews, Jewish Publication Society, Philadelphia, 1947, page 362, end footnote. The Bible, then, is used merely for show, so as to give the Jews the appearance of being godly and God's people, while their true law and religion is derived from the teachings and traditions of the Talmud. The Talmud is the work of numerous Jewish scholars over a period of some 700 years, roughly speaking, between 200 BC and 500 AD. Footnote. Dr. Boaz Cohen, Every Man's Talmud, E. P. Dutton, New York, 1949, page Roman numeral 3. End footnote. The Jewish religion as it is today traces its descent, without a break, through all the centuries from the Pharisees. Their leading ideals and methods found expression in a literature of enormous extent, of which a very great deal is still in existence. The Talmud is the largest and most important single member of that literature. Footnote. The Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 8, 1942, page 474. End footnote. The Talmud is actually the product of the Palestinian and Babylonian schools, and is generally called the Babylonian Talmud. Footnote. The Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 7, 1905, page 1, end footnote. The Pharisees were adherents of this Babylonian thought, and it was this thought and religion which Christ was always at war against. Christ rebuked them because they Reject the commandments of God, so that you may keep your own Babylonian traditions. Mark 7, verse 9. Judaism and Christianity are poles apart. The opposition between these two systems is as radical today as it was in the days of Christ. But Judaism is not only derived from Babylonian thought, but also from Canaanite religious practices. Footnote: The Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 6, 1942, page 235. End footnote. Esau had married women of the Canaanite race, whose religious practices were abhorred by God, Leviticus 20, verse 23. Jacob, however, learned the ways of the Lord and his commandments, Jasher 29, verse 11. But Edom rejected God's ways and worshipped other gods, 2 Chronicles 25, verse 14. The Jews, like their Edomite, Canaanite, Pharisaical, and Babylonian ancestors, also reject the commandments of God. This rejection and defiance of God is what Judaism is based upon. As the Jew Bernard Lazar revealed, it is the Jews who originated biblical exegesis, a critical analysis of the Bible, just as they were the first to criticize the forms and doctrines of Christianity. Truly, has Darmstadter written, the Jew was the apostle of unbelief, and every revolt of mind originated with him. Footnote: Bernard Lazar, Antisemitism, Its History and Causes, London, Britain's Publishing Company, 1967, pages 149 through 151. End footnote. Since Jews have an inclination towards this Talmudic religion which defies God, an obvious conflict will exist between them and anyone who adheres to the laws or ways of God. So repugnant was the Talmud to the white Christian people of Europe that on numerous occasions kings and popes issued edicts to have the Talmud burned. Like Esau and Jacob, the Jews and white Christian people have been struggling and in conflict with each other from their first encounter with one another. A look through history reveals the continual disputes, arguments, and disagreements between the Jews and Christians. One of the earliest instances is the dialogue of Justin Martyr, circa 165, with Tryphon the Jew. Footnote: The New Standard Jewish Encyclopedia, 1977, 5th edition, page 562. End footnote. Such dialogues and disputations between Jews and Christians have generally centered around the same subjects, such as the virgin birth, the nature of the messianic prophecies and their fulfillment, the divinity of Jesus, and various aspects of the law. Contrasting opinions on such topics have been permanent traits of these two peoples. A conflict of genetic traits. This contrasting and conflicting way of thinking between Jews and the white European is not artificial or a result of their environment, but is based on the nature of their physical constitutions. Thus, the conflict between them is not reconcilable any more than it was between Esau and Jacob. The Jew Maurice Samuel, in speaking to those of the white race, explained it well. There are two life forces in the world I know, Jewish and Gentile, ours and yours. I do not believe that this primal difference between Gentile and Jew is reconcilable. You and we may come to an understanding, never to a reconciliation. There will be irritation between us as long as we are in intimate contact, for nature and constitution and vision divide us from all of you, forever. Footnote: Maurice Samuel, You Gentiles, Harcourt, Brace & Company, New York, 1924, pages 19 and 23. End footnote. The conflicting differences that exist between Jews and those of the white race are primarily a result of their genetic differences or their nature and constitution. Jews act and think differently from white Christian peoples because there is a difference in their brains. According to Dr. Richard Goodman, in a study he made for Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, there are 112 hereditary diseases within the Jewish race which originate from causes found within the Jewish brain and central nervous system. Footnote: as documented in Genetic Disorders Among the Jewish People by Dr. Richard Goodman, Johns Hopkins University Press, and footnote. Some of these diseases include Bloom syndrome, familial dysautonomia, Goucher's disease, and Tay-Sachs disease. These mental and neurological abnormalities have a direct relation on Jewish behavioral patterns which other peoples would find to be obnoxious and alien. These mental diseases no doubt account for some of the common Jewish traits, such as being abrasive, rude, stingy, sexually perverted, aggressive, schizophrenic, and hostile. Such mental and neurological disorders among Jews has long been known to the science world. Dr. Joseph A. Jacobs, a Jew, in the Journal of the Anthropological Institute of Great Britain, published in 1886, volume 15, page 360, has lists comparing high percentage of Jews having mental diseases. In the Jewish Encyclopedia, it states, "The Jews are more subject to diseases of the nervous system than the other races and peoples among which they dwell. Hysteria and neurasthenia appear to be the most frequent. Some physicians of large experience among the Jews have even gone so far as to state that most of them are neurasthenic and hysterical." Footnote: The Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 9, 1905, page 225. End footnote. Dr. Alexander Pilez, world-famous psychiatrist from Vienna, states in his outstanding work, Vienna Klinische Rundschau, page 888, "Cases where acute psychoses lend to idiocy and lunacy are of particular frequency with the Jews. By contrast, there are no hereditary diseases which exist exclusively within the white race, and the Negro race has only one, sickle cell anemia. As a highly mixed and mongrelized people, the Jews would be more prone to diseases than pure races. The same is true with hybridized plants and animals. This would include diseases of the mind. Idiocy and imbecility are found comparatively more often among Jews than among non-Jews. The Mongolian type of idiocy is also very frequently observed among Jews. Among the Jews, the proportion of insane has been observed to be very large. Jews are more liable to the acute psychoses of early age than are Gentiles." Footnote: The Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 6, 1904, page 556 and 603 through 604. End footnote. The Jewish Encyclopedia also states the causes of these mental disorders in Jews is due to the neurotic taint of the race, a racial characteristic, and consanguineous marriages. The high proportion of insanity, idiocy, imbecility, and lunacy in Jews helps to explain why the Talmud is a collection of imbecilic ramblings of insane minds. Jews and white people are genetically not of the same mind. The Jews and white race are clearly two different characters in God's script, acting out the different roles of Esau and Jacob. They are two manner of people, spiritually, morally, mentally, and biologically, causing natural conflicts between them which are not reconcilable. Esau's hatred of Jacob. The conflicting and antagonistic relationship between Esau and Jacob was magnified and intensified when Esau sold his birthright to Jacob for a mere bowl of pottage, Genesis 25, verse 33. Jacob then had the legal right to receive the blessings of the inheritance which he received from Isaac by pretending he was Esau. When Esau realized what had happened, and that Jacob now possessed the blessings that could have been his, Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing, Genesis 27, verse 41. This hatred was now to be an attribute and earmark of the character Esau Edom. Throughout the rest of the script, this attribute does not change or subside. It is clearly revealed by Scripture that Esau Edom would be a perpetual adversary of Jacob Israel, as it is written, "The children of Esau hated the sons of Jacob, and the hatred and enmity were very strong between them all the days unto this day." Jasher 58, verse 28. Thus, the descendants of Esau would hate and despise the entire race descended from Jacob. Esau's hatred of Jacob was exhibited when Edom refused to give Israel passage through his border. Numbers 20, verse 21. During the 8th century BC, the prophet Amos distinctly rebukes Edom for her cruelty and anger toward Israel. Thus says the Lord, "For 3 transgressions of Edom, and for 4, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because he did pursue his brother with the sword, and did cast off all pity, and his anger did tear perpetually, and he kept his wrath forever." Amos 1, verse 11. Some 200 years later, the prophet Ezekiel also offers condemnation against Edom, or Mount Seir, the Edomites, because of their perpetual hatred for the children of Israel. "Because thou, Mount Seir, has had a perpetual hatred, and has shed the blood of the children of Israel by the force of the sword in the time of their calamity, in the time that their iniquity had an end." Ezekiel 35, verse 5. Mount Seir, representing the nation or race of Esau Edom, or the Edomites, has had a perpetual hatred for the children of Israel down through history. All throughout the Bible, the Edomites had shown their hatred and opposition of God's chosen people, Israel. This was a characteristic of these people, which they would not lose. Hatred by Edom's descendants. Nowhere in Scripture is such hatred and animosity to be found as that which Esau Edom had for Jacob Israel. The question is, where in history can you find this manner of hatred of one group of people by another? The parallel is clearly revealed in the hatred which the Jews have for the white Christian people. The most obvious evidence of the perpetual hatred Jews have toward the white Christian people is found in their own Talmud. In this work of hatred and perversion, the Jewish rabbis and sages throughout the centuries have expressed the Jewish attribute of hate toward white Christians. Footnote: some of the terms used in the Talmud and other Jewish writings for Christians are goy, goyim, meaning cattle, Gentile, min, minim, minuth, heathen, kuthian, akum, idolaters, nokri, and notstream. End footnote. The following are some excerpts from the Talmud which demonstrate Jewish hatred of Christians. "It is allowed to cheat a Gentile and take usury of him." Baba Mazia, 61a, Abodah Zarah, 54a. "The goyim, or Christians, are regarded as unclean." Shabbat 145b, Abodah Zarah, 22b. "It is not allowed to rob a brother Jew, but to rob a Gentile is allowed." Baba Mazia, 61a, Sanhedrin 57a. "The goyim are not like men, but are as animals." Kerethuth 6b. "The seed of a goy is worth the same as that of a beast." Kethubath 3b, Baba Mazia 114:6. "A Jew must not enter into the home of a Christian." Gittin 62a. "The goyim are not to be cured or helped when sick, even for money." Abodah Zarah 27b, Yore Dea 158:1. "It is permitted to deceive a goy." Baba Kama 113b. "Jews must try to deceive Christians." Zohar 1, 160a. "A Jew may lie and perjure himself to condemn a Christian." Baba Kama 113a, 113b. "A Jew shall not do injury to other Jews, but the law does not prohibit injury to a goy." Mishnah Sanhedrin 57. "Those who do good to the Christian will not rise from the dead." Zohar 1, 25b. "All the festivals of the followers of Jesus are forbidden, and we must conduct ourselves toward them as we would toward idolaters." Abodah Zarah 2a, 78c. "Do not save a goy in danger of death." 20, 1. "When a Jew and a goy come to court, you must absolve the Jew and take his side as far as possible according to Jewish law. If, however, the Jew can be absolved according to Gentile law, absolve him." Abba Kama 113a. A Jew may keep anything he finds belonging to the Akum, Christian. To return it is a sin. Chasham Ham 266.1. The Talmud clearly represents an underlying Jewish object of hatred toward Christians. It teaches Jews to be against the Goyim in every aspect of life, while working to destroy the Christians' religion and undermining their culture and society. This hatred of Christians, as taught by the ancient rabbi, has continued to succeeding generations and is prevalent in the words and feelings of Jews to this day. Eli Wiesel, the Nobel Prize-winning Jewish author and world-famous Holocaust survivor, promotes hatred of white people by Jews. In one of his books, he stated, "Every Jew, somewhere in his being, should set apart a zone of hate, healthy, virile hate, for what the German personifies and what persists in the German. To do otherwise would be a betrayal of the dead." Footnote, Eli Wiesel, Legends of Our Time, Holt 1968, page 142, and footnote. It is indeed interesting that the same enduring hate Edom had for Jacob, the Jews have toward Christians. It is also ironic that Jews, who have all this hate in them for Christians, have gone to great lengths to convince the world that they are completely innocent of such an attribute, and it is the Christian who hates the Jew. Edom's hatred of Jesus Christ. The prophecies of Christ's birth were well known to the people at that time. He was to be the king over all the earth, Zechariah 14:9, Daniel 7:13. The Messiah, Daniel 9, verse 25. The Redeemer of Israel, Isaiah 59, verse 20, 62, verse 11. And would be of the house of David, Jeremiah 23, verse 5. The script also reveals that Christ had enemies from the moment of his birth. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he that is born king of the Jews, or Judeans? For we have seen his star in the east, and are come to worship him." When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Matthew 2, verses 1 through 3. Why was this Herod troubled about the birth and arrival of the Messiah, Jesus Christ? First, we find that Herod was not of the same racial lineage as Christ. Antipater, an Idumean by birth, was made by Caesar procurator of all Judea, and his son, commonly called Herod the Great, was at the time of Christ's birth king of Judea, including Idumea. Footnote, the Popular and Critical Bible Encyclopedia, Volume 2, page 852, 1908, and footnote. Herod, like his father Antipater, was an Edomian or Edomite by birth. Josephus, in his Antiquities of the Jews, also esteems Herod as an Edomian, Book 14, Chapter 15, Section 2, page 438. Herod had talked in secret to the wise men, telling them to diligently search for the young child, and when they found him, to come back and tell him so he may come and worship him also. Matthew 2, verses 7 through 8. This was actually a ruse so that Herod could kill Christ. When the wise men found Christ, they were warned of God in a dream not to return to Herod. Matthew 2, verse 12. Thus, they did not return to Herod with the information of Christ's location, which made Herod the Edomite furious. Then when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, he became very enraged and sent and slew all the male children that were in Bethlehem and in all the coasts thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. Matthew 2, verse 16. Herod the Edomite had such a hatred for Christ and what he represented that he had ordered a mass execution to make sure Jesus would be killed. Had not the angel of the Lord instructed Joseph to flee to Egypt with Jesus, Herod would have surely succeeded in killing him. Other enemies of Christ included the Pharisees, who were promoting and following the religion of Babylon, which developed into the Talmud, the basis of Judaism. Footnote. The Jews admit that the Pharisees and the rabbis were the same kind of teachers. Rabbi A. Cohen, Every Man's Talmud, page Roman numeral 34. End footnote. Thus, the rabbis and the Jewish Talmud have picked up where Herod and the Pharisees left off in their onslaught of hatred against Jesus Christ, the Redeemer of Israel. In the Talmud, Jesus is referred to as a sorcerer, idolater, seducer, blasphemer, and a fool. It says he committed bestiality, sexual perversion, and performed magic. It assigns 4 deaths for Jesus: stoning, burning, decapitation, and strangulation. The Jews' assault against Christ and Christianity is historic, as admitted by the Jew Bernard Lazar. The Jew is not content merely to destroy Christianity, but he preaches the gospel of Judaism. He not only assails the Catholic or the Protestant faith, but he incites to unbelief, and then imposes on those whose faith he has undermined his own conception of the world, of morality, and of life. He is engaged in his historic mission, the annihilation of the religion of Christ. Footnote. Bernard Lazar, Antisemitism, Its History and Causes, translated by Britain's Publishing Company, London, 1967, page 158. End footnote. Like Herod, the Jew has a hereditary hatred for Christ and Christianity, and this is clearly expressed in the Talmud and other Jewish works. Despite this fact, the organized church world cannot or will not acknowledge that the decline of their Christian nation is proportional to the number and influence of the Jews allowed to exist in it. Antisemitism. The term antisemitism has been used by the Jews to counter and conceal God's natural order and plan in the world, an order which has assigned to the Jew the role of aggressor, hater, destroyer, seducer, invader, and corrupter. By simply calling one antisemitic, the Jews attempt to put all blame for conflict on the other party. In other words, it is those Arabs, or those Palestinians, or the Germans who are the haters and aggressors, when in fact it is the Jew. Writing in The American Hebrew, Jesse H. Holmes stated, "It can hardly be an accident that antagonism directed against the Jews is to be found pretty much everywhere in the world where Jews and non-Jews are associated. And as the Jews are the common element of the situation, it would seem probable that the cause will be found in them rather than in the widely varying groups which feel this antagonism." Footnote. As quoted in The International Jew, The Dearborn Publishing Company, 1920, Volume 4, page 222. End footnote. The result of this name-calling tactic is to focus the attention on the effect of the conflict and not at its cause. The cause is always some obnoxious trait of the Jew that precipitates conflict and action against the Jew. The Jews then say that it is antisemitism or unwarranted Jew hatred. Yet the hatred or action against the Jew is a natural response. Writing under the chapter title of Jew Hatred as a Natural Instinct, Samuel Roth states, "Antisemitism, Jew hatred, is so instinctive that it may quite simply be called one of the primal instincts of mankind, one of the important instincts by which the race helps to preserve itself against total destruction. I cannot emphasize the matter too strongly. Antisemitism is not, as Jews have tried to make the world believe, an active prejudice. It is a deeply hidden instinct with which every man is born. He remains unconscious of it, as of all other instincts of self-preservation, until something happens to awaken it. Just as when something flies in the direction of your eyes, the eyelids close instantly and of their own accord. So, swiftly and surely is the instinct of antisemitism awakened in man, there is not a single instance when the Jews have not fully deserved the bitter fruit of the fury of their persecutors." Footnote. Samuel Roth, Jews Must Live, 1934, page 64. End footnote. The Jew, like Esau, has revolted against God's order, and all are justified who do act against the Jew in this regard. Thus, it would seem as if the grievances of the anti-Semite were well-founded. The Jewish spirit is essentially a revolutionary spirit, and consciously or otherwise, the Jew is a revolutionist. Footnote, Bernard Lazar, Antisemitism, Its History and Causes, page 149, end footnote. What we actually have in the world is Esau, who is the hater and aggressor, trying to conceal from the world his identity and innate attributes. If Esau's true identity and traits became publicly known, he would once again be powerless in the world. The Jews have inherited these attributes of Esau and frantically try to silence anyone who would reveal them. The anti-Semitic charge, along with the hate laws, is a tool the Jew uses in defense of his offensive, hostile, revolutionary, and anti-Christian nature. If it can be insinuated that one charged with anti-Semitism is the hater and aggressor, an emotional response of the masses can be directed against that individual, forcing him into either silence or loss of status in society, business, or politics. Ever since the Jews invented the libel charge of anti-Semitism in the 1880s, footnote, the word anti-Semitism was first printed in 1880, the Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 1, 1901, page 641, end footnote. It has been built up with Jewish money, organizations, propaganda, and lies, e.g. the Holocaust, so that now the word is like snake venom which paralyzes one's nervous system. Even the mention of the word Jew is shunned unless used in a most favorable and positive context, e.g. being God's chosen people. This stigma exists even with conservative and right-wing individuals and organizations. They speak of world problems, conflicts, and wars as being caused by the communists, or the Zionists, or by those international bankers, or the CFR and trilateral organizations. Even though there is clear evidence that Jews are behind all of these movements and organizations, the Jewish connection is avoided like the bubonic plague. The end result is that those who fear being labeled anti-Semitic will never be effective in exposing the root of the problems in the land. No such fear existed in Jesus Christ, who boldly spoke against the Talmudic Pharisees face to face in public gatherings. He specifically pointed out their characteristics, stating they were hypocrites, a generation of vipers, full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness, blind guides, a wicked and adulterous generation, full of iniquity, serpents, murderers, and of their father the devil. Because of Christ's exposure of the traits and ways of these Talmudic Jews, they could not easily continue in their ungodly practices. These Jews thus sought to kill him, John 8, verses 37 and 40, and eventually succeeded. In today's thought-controlled world, Jesus Christ would be considered a hater and an anti-Semite. This is clear, for the Jews have made it known that the New Testament is, quote, the most anti-Semitic book ever written, end quote. The key. If the Jew is to live in Christian society, his true nature and attributes must be concealed and censored from the masses. Thus, the Jew states that throughout history, he has been the one persecuted. Yet the cause of that persecution, anti-Christian and offensive Jewish traits, is never told. And when these traits are concealed, the cause and nature of much of the problems, conflicts, conspiracies, and wars in the world are also concealed. Speaking on these problems, Henry Ford stated, "Half the confusion which men meet in their efforts to account for the world is due to their ignorance of just where is the Jew. He is always a key. But if the key be disguised as something else, how can it be used?" Footnote, The International Jew, Dearborn Publishing Company, 1921, Volume 2, page 245, end footnote. Here we now have the key as to the origin and source for so much of the conflict and friction that is now so prevalent in the world. Two of the main characters acting on stage, in the world, have two diametrically opposite value systems and spiritual dispositions, and the twain shall never meet. To quote the Jew Maurice Samuels, "I suspected from the first dawning of Jewish self-consciousness that between you Gentiles, white Christians, and us Jews lies an unbridgeable gulf." Footnote, Maurice Samuels, You Gentiles, 1924, page 9, and footnote. The Jews, being an offshoot or extraction of Esau Edom, have a deep-seated hatred for God's people, the white Israelite people, and their God. Edom's role in the script calls for this hatred to be acted out in the world. They cannot and will not deviate from their role. Most see what is happening in the world, but can offer no logical reason as to why there would exist this continual conflict, struggle, and hatred between the Jew and those of the white race. Most do not understand, or refuse to accept the fact, that God has so ordained this conflict from the beginning. This is the only logical explanation for what we see in the world regarding such things.